One of the great things about modern Bible scholarship is that in many cases we have been able to determine what words were actually written by the original authors and what words have been added by well-intentioned scribes and redactors over the years. Most of you are aware that it is almost universally accepted that the Gospel of Mark was the first gospel to be written. What you may not know is that ancient manuscripts of Mark's gospel have different endings. One ending is called the short ending, another is called the long ending, and a third just sort of stops without even seeming to have an ending. While most modern editions of the Bible have the long ending, scholars generally agree it is the version that seems to stop without an ending that is the way Mark actually wrote the story. Then, in the years following Mark's writing of the original gospel, faithful and loving Christians found Mark's lack of closure to the story so disconcerting, they added their own endings. I can think of no better way to begin an Easter sermon than to go back to that very first gospel in its original form and see how Mark ended the story, to see how Mark's Easter story took shape. To do this, we must remove those added endings, which means we must cut off the part about Jesus appearing to Mary Magdalene and to the disciples. We have to do away with the part about the resurrected Jesus commissioning his disciples, saying that those who will be baptized will be saved and those who will not be baptized will be condemned. We have to set aside the part about true believers picking up deadly snakes and drinking poisons without being harmed. We have to ignore the part about Jesus ascending through the heavens to physically sit at the right hand of God. And I'm not saying you can't believe those things. I'm not saying they didn't happen. I'm just saying the person who wrote the original story didn't put those things in his account of what happened. And for reasons I hope will become apparent, I believe the original ending of the Gospel of Mark is one of the most inspiring and ingenious pieces of writing in all of history. Here is how Mark's original story reaches its dramatic and troubling ending. Mark tells us about the crucifixion and the death of Jesus. He then explains about Jesus' burial, with a rock being rolled across the entrance to the tomb. And then on Sunday, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of Jesus, and Salome go to the tomb to anoint the body. When they arrive, the stone has been rolled away, and in the tomb they see a young man dressed in white who tells them not to be alarmed, but as they can plainly see, Jesus is no longer there, that he has left and gone to Galilee. And Mark bluntly and unexpectedly ends the story with this sentence: "So the women went out and fled the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid." The end. Let me explain why I think that is such an ingenious ending. When I hear that story, I think the same thing that those early Christians would have thought when they heard the story end like that. Wait a minute, that's not right. That's not how this story ends. If those women hadn't told anybody what happened, then nobody would ever have known. And I'm instantly wanting to tell you that Jesus really was still alive, that through the ages, millions of people have experienced his presence, that in the world today, there are countless thousands of churches built for the purpose of worshiping God through Jesus Christ and keeping his story alive. What has Mark done? He has drawn me into the story. I'm no longer a casual reader who pages through the Bible and reads it as if I am digesting fact after fact. I'm in the story now. I'm no longer a casual observer. I'm a part of the story, and the story's a part of me. That is the genius of the story, and that is the theme of this morning's message. If we're just casual observers, viewing the Good Friday Easter scene with little more than intellectual curiosity, we're missing something important and beautiful. This struck home with me when a friend asked an interesting question. He said, "What would you want somebody who knew nothing about Christianity to know about Easter?" I gave this a great deal of thought because Easter is the central event of the church, and I was unable to answer my friend's question on the spur of the moment, but his question did give me the impetus I needed to put together my outline for this morning's message. I quickly realized I would have to talk about Easter from two perspectives, theological and practical. Theological, because if it were not for the theology behind Easter, it would be just another day on the church calendar. And practical, because theology unapplied to the real world serves no purpose, really. And so, here are the things I would want people unfamiliar with Christianity to know about Easter. First, I would have to explain that University Congregational Church is a theologically liberal congregation, and the things that I say about Easter from this pulpit will be quite different from what they would hear at most churches. We don't worry too much about creeds, dogma, confessions of faith. Some would be shocked to learn that there are some in this church who believe in the physical resurrection of Jesus, and there are some who do not. The latter group believes that any resurrection which occurred was spiritual and did not have anything to do with the physical body of Jesus. And this is a rare place, because we have no problem holding both of these views side by side in the same congregation. The people of this church have managed to get past any need to adhere to identical religious thoughts and learn to live and worship together by respecting one another's differences. Is the resurrection central to the Christian faith? Well, yes and no. There are those who believe that it is the teachings of Jesus that laid the foundation for the Christian faith, and it is our honest attempt to follow those teachings that define us as Christians. We have many such people among us, and they are some of the most sincere and devoted Christians I have ever encountered. But today is Easter, and the mystery of the resurrection is meant to be pondered on this day. As for the idea of the resurrection itself, how could the resurrection be real if it was not a physical resurrection? First, let me make clear, I would never say the physical resurrection did not happen. This is God's universe, and if God chose to make the physical atoms, molecules, and cells that comprised the earthly body of Jesus go away to some other place, like I say, this is God's universe, and God gets to make the rules. I cannot tie my personal belief in the resurrection to the physical world. We have this tendency to think that the only things that are real are the things we can measure with a ruler or weigh with scales. But there are many of us who believe that what is real is not restricted to that which is a part of the physical world. For example, I have a love for my family that is as real as the wood from which this pulpit is made. But you needn't get out your rulers or your scales to measure it. It can't be measured. And if that is your only measure of reality, then my love is nothing. The reality of the risen Christ is not determined by whether or not the physical body of Jesus is still somewhere in the physical universe. It may be, but I know a great many very sincere believers in the resurrection who ask the simple question, where is that body now? Does Jesus physically walk on some planet circling a star in a distant galaxy? Perhaps. Again, understand, I'm not saying the physical resurrection did not happen. I'm merely attempting to explain how it is that one can be a sincere Christian and a convinced believer in the resurrection of Christ without insisting that the physical body of Jesus still exists somewhere in the material world. The Apostle Paul was the first biblical writer to attempt to explain the resurrection. Paul used the analogy of a seed and the plant which comes from the seed, claiming that what lies beyond this life is as different from life on earth as a full-grown plant is different from the seed first planted in the ground. Paul elaborates on that theme in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. But some will ask, how are the dead raised? With what kind of body do they come? Fool, what you sow does not come to life unless it dies. What is sown is perishable. What is raised is imperishable. It is sown a physical body. It is raised a spiritual body. Flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. I personally believe in the resurrection of Christ, and I would want a person who is unfamiliar with Christianity to know that my belief is grounded on faith, but not on faith alone. There is evidence of the resurrection all around us. There are thousands of churches spread all over the globe 2,000 years after the earthly body of Jesus breathed its last. That, for me, is powerful evidence of the resurrection. The most overwhelming evidence that the resurrection is real lies in the fact that millions upon millions of lives have been changed.